Okay, let's talk nepotism. Donald Trump loves to down Joe Biden and Joe Biden's son, saying that his son just got jobs because his last name was Biden. Don, your kids only got jobs because their last name was Trump. Seriously, man. I mean, here's a clip from an interview on the Larry King show way back when Donald Trump was doing The Apprentice and decided to have one of his kids take over at the board table on this Apprentice show. And and Larry King says to Trump, I'm sorry for laughing, he says, isn't that nepotism? I mean, isn't that someone getting a job just because they're your kid? And Trump says,
all right, your daughter Ivanka will be taking Caroline's place on The Apprentice.
Correct.
Nepotism.
That's true.
Why?
I like nepotism. You know, if you can't take care of your kids, you know that better than I.
Tantana was a big fan of.
I like nepotism. I think, you know, a lot of people say, oh, nepotism, say, usually these are people without children. But I like nepotism.
Oh, my God. This confuses me greatly. Anyway, on to more important things. Woke up this morning, got dressed, could not find my shoes. Uh-oh. It's time to lose your mind. You know, those moments when you say to yourself, I've lost my mind. I can't find my shoes. I looked under my bed. I looked at the front door, the back door, the side door, the middle door, every door I could find. I even checked the windowsills in case I was trying to escape last night and left my shoes there. I could not find my shoes anywhere. I even looked in the toilet. Finally, I find my shoes outside. I guess they were muddy. I took them off and I left them outside of the house, outside of the front door. And then I realized I'm forgetting things. It's time to start searching for a place to live. Do you ever hear the stories where people actually put their, they can't find their keys. I can't find my keys. I can't go anywhere. I can't find my keys. They look everywhere. They find their keys in the refrigerator. If you lose your keys and then find them in the refrigerator, I was going to get a glass of milk. I put my keys down in the refrigerator. I got the milk and I guess I left my keys in the refrigerator. Oh no, it means more than that. There's something wrong with you. You need to seek professional help. And even if you sit down with a psychologist or a therapist and said, doctor, I left my keys in the refrigerator. The therapist will literally stand up and say, I can't help you. I cannot help you. You are just too far gone. You left your keys in the what the hell's wrong with you? I don't think a therapist is supposed to say what the hell's wrong with you. See, that's why I'm not a therapist. As I said on yesterday's show, it would have been the perfect job for me because you can make a lot of money. You sit there for an hour and you just fantasize about having sex with the patient. You don't actually have it, but you fantasize about it. You don't listen to a word they say. The only thing you mutter about every 90 seconds is, and what do you think about that? Oh, really? And what do you think about that? That's all you do. It's a whole thing. It's a whole deal. And then at the end of 60 minutes, you just say, well, I don't care that you're going to kill yourself. Our time is up, so good luck to you and I'll see you next week. And try not to put your keys in a refrigerator, huh? What the hell's wrong with you? Yeah, I could not be a therapist. That would not work out.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hello, welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I swear it's true. I'm going to entertain you like some pathetic puppet for an extended period of time. It won't last too long. Don't worry about it. And when the show's over, your life will change for the worse, probably. I make no claims here. Everything that happens here, I'm not responsible for anything whatsoever. I don't care what it is. I'm not responsible for it. That's what you should understand from the very beginning. If you hear something on the show that's going to say to yourself, oh, that sounds like a good idea. I think I'll give that a shot. I'm not responsible. I had nothing to do with it. This is for sure. Nothing. Even if it turns out well, I had nothing to do with it. Well, here's another difference between men and women. If you can't tell the difference physically, it's shoes. It's the shoes. Men wear the same shoes every single day. No matter what the occasion, it can be a wedding, a funeral, a bar mitzvah, or going four-wheeling with your friends. It's the same shoes no matter what. I'll go as far to say it's the same socks, but that gets a little disgusting. Same shoes. Men do not change their shoes ever, ever, ever. The only time they change their shoes is if it's raining outside and they're walking around outside and their socks get wet because there's a hole in the bottom of their shoes that they never looked at. Men don't look at the bottom of their shoes. What's the point of that? That's when you go out and you get new shoes. Other than that, it just doesn't happen. Women, on the other hand, changing their shoes continually. They never wear the same shoes for 2 minutes in a row. I got to change into my jeans now. Where's my blue shoes that match the jeans? I can't go out like this. The shoes are black. The jeans are blue. Where's my blue shoes? I can't go out like this. I think women change their panties. I love saying that word because it's so wrong. It's nothing. I mean, it's women's underpants, but they're called panties. And as soon as you call them panties, it's like someone's going into somebody's drawer illegally. I mean, panties. Well, stop it. Just stop it. We don't do that with men's underwear. You know, oh, men are going to put their underpants on. Ooh, underpants. Ooh, underpants. But somehow panties are like, ooh, panties. Come on, man. Come on. I've heard stories that men with fetishes, that should be the name of my next book, men with fetishes, they actually like to this is disgusting. Have the kids leave the room for just a second. Are they gone? Okay. Men actually sniff women's panties and find that to be sexually erotic. Let me tell you something. Sniffing anybody's panties or pants or anything is not a great idea. Probably it's just, it puts a tag on you of being not normal. What is normal anymore? But mean just being not deserving of being on the planet. But men have that fetish, you know, but, there's no fetish with sniffing a man's underpants. It's like, what are you crazy? That's not a fetish. That's a sickness, man. You started this conversation. I didn't. I don't remember how it started. I think it was you. I'm not sure. Tori Lagarde does a show with me on Mondays, and we were talking about the word whatever. I love the word. As soon as it started becoming popular, I embraced it like a girlfriend. I mean, whatever, it's just so fantastic. And you have to say it with that valley girl kind of thing going, you know, that whatever, you have to do it like that. I love the, if I was limited to one word and one word only, it would be whatever. Ron, I love you. I just love you. Whatever. What a wonderful, it bothered Tori greatly. I hate to talk about somebody that's not here, but you heard it on the show. That word bothers her. She finds it insulting. I find it to be extremely entertaining. When I hear somebody say whatever, I go crazy. I love that. It just sums up everything for me. It does. It's just that one word said in such a sarcastically demeaning manner is just everything to me. I don't like to hear people go on and talk and talk and talk about the same thing over and over and over again. They never seem to shut up. I call it verbal diarrhea. It just doesn't stop. And if I could just stand there and say, whatever, it would, wow, what a, one word would just stop it. It's like putting down spike strips on a car that's running from the police. It just stops it immediately. Whatever. I don't know if I go as far as to put it on my tombstone. Tombstone. Sounds like I'm from the Old West. Did you go up to Dead Man's Hill and see what's on Ron's tombstone? Tombstone. I don't know what that's like. I have no idea. I would have been horrible in the Old West. Oh, I would have. Yeah, they would have shot me like a long time ago. This guy, he just says whatever all the time. I'm going to make him say his last whatever right now. When they had arguments, man, they just faced each other in the middle of the street and shot at each other. Can we talk about this first? No, we can't. This is the way we settle everything. Oh, well, okay. Wow. And I guess in Europe they were doing the glove slap, I guess they did it in this country too at one point. They would take their gloves off in a very angry manner. Have you ever taken your gloves off in a very angry manner? I'm going to take these gloves off, these stupid five-fingered pieces of cloth. I'm going to take them off my hands right now. Angrily, you take your gloves off. You've been insulted in some way. And then you take one of the gloves and you slap the person in the face as you're holding the glove. And that is a challenge for a duel or something like that. Nowadays, we don't bother taking the glove off. We just slap the person with the glove on. I mean, you know, what's the point of taking the glove off and then slapping them with the glove? It's like, I don't want to hurt you with my hand in the glove, so I'm mad at you, but I'm going to take the glove off and just slap you with a piece of cloth and then challenge you to a duel and put a sharp sword through your chest. But I don't want to hurt your face by having my hand in the glove, though. That I don't want to do. I have some semblance of civility, sir. I said good day. Civility's funny, man. Did men usually take their jackets off and lay them in a puddle of mud so a woman could walk over your jacket and not get mud on the bottom of her feet? God forbid they should get mud on their shoes. Oh, my God. I will be chivalrous. I will risk this velvet jacket costs me a lot of money, you know. But I'm going to lay it down in the mud and get it all dirty and filthy and probably be ruined so that you don't get the bottom of your shoes muddy, young lady. This is a real man. That is the definition of a real man. Real men don't exist anymore. They just, you know, they just walk around. They don't know what they're supposed to do. I have no idea anymore. You should do things for women. You shouldn't do things for women. It's demeaning to do it. It's chivalrous to do it. I don't even bother. I don't even bother anymore. When you're dating, when a guy is dating a young lady, or even an older one, first date, you open the door for her. You run around to the passenger side of the car if you're driving. You run around to the passenger side of the car. You open up the door. She gets out. You extend your hand to help her out, like she's 160 years old or something, and you help her out of the car, and you open that car door. God forbid she should open a car door by herself, and you help her out of the car, and then you close the door behind her. You let her go in front of you, and you walk into the restaurant, and you before she walks through, you run ahead and you open the door for her. She can't open doors. She's a woman. So you open the door for her, and she goes, shows she didn't have to touch any doors. She didn't have to touch any handles. But you do that horrible handle with all the germs on it. She's not to touch that. You open the door for her and she walks in, and you walk behind her, and you get them, they seat you at a table in the restaurant. It's a fancy restaurant. You walk around, you pull the chair out for her. She shouldn't be pulling out chairs at her age. You pull the chair out for her, and she sits down, and then you scoot the seat under her ass so that she didn't have to touch a damn thing. It's like everything's automatic for her, and she sits there you do all that on the first date, and she says to herself, well, you know, I could have done this all myself, but you're definitely displaying that you're a gentleman. I get it. I read it online that you're a gentleman, and look at you. You don't let me touch a damn thing. Whatever. And then someday you marry this woman. You marry this woman, and you know you never open a damn door for her again, ever. You pull up to a restaurant, you get out of the car, she gets out by herself. You don't even think about running around to open the door for her. Well, she can open her own door. You walk 5 miles ahead of her, and she's like lagging behind, and you turn around. Rather than opening doors for her, you actually turn around and say, come on, hurry up, come on, you walk too slow. It's the opposite. You pay absolutely no attention to her whatsoever. Like she doesn't even exist. Oh, am I with you? I forgot you're even here. It's the opposite. It's crazy. Okay, we have a great guest on today's program. We're going to talk about stuff. You know what I'm talking about, stuff. And we're going to do that right after this.
You are listening to Ron Van Dam, the gentle, fast-acting laxative of the podcast world. Don't you feel better already?
Morning.
Hi, Jonathan. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Ron. How are you?
I'm great. Jonathan Reckford joins us. He's with Habitat for Humanity International. He's the CEO and author of his book, Our Better Angels. And that's what we're talking about today. It's a recent book release. This is about how ordinary people are transforming the world around us. Finally, a book that uplifts me as opposed to depresses me. So thank you for doing that. Most of us know Habitat for Humanity through Jimmy Carter, who's been with that program for a long time. As a matter of fact, I understand there's participation of his in your book.
There is. President Carter wrote the foreword for the book, but also absolutely is featured in a couple of the stories. And he is did not start Habitat, which most people think, but right. Is certainly our most famous volunteer. And last week was the 36th year in a row that he and Mrs. Carter spent a week building somewhere in the world with Habitat. And I think that's it's hard to calculate how many people have been drawn into the mission because of their engagement.
Very true. Very true. Our Better Angels, tell us about the book. Now, what inspired you to write this book?
The book was really inspired by, now close to 15 years of seeing regular folks do amazing things in their communities and the power of that. And the trigger was actually after Hurricane Harvey hit Texas, and we wrote an op-ed with President Carter, and he quoted President Lincoln saying, "When the waters rise, so do our better angels," observing that, you know, when these terrible disasters happen, neighbors start helping neighbors, and you see these amazing spontaneous acts of service. And in a way, the challenge was, why can't we do that every day and not just after a disaster? And that was the beginning, the seeds of the book.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Habitat for Humanity itself, is that completely a private citizen driven, or is there federal funding for that program?
It is overwhelmingly private funding, though we do get some government support, and we do that we think governments need to be involved because really housing requires zoning. You know, the policy side has a huge impact on housing. But historically, most of our funding has come from the private sector. And then what people don't realize is we also, the families buy their homes and we revolve their mortgages in the same community. So when one family is paying their loan, they're helping another family have the opportunity. And then we have a chain of over 1,000 Habitat for Humanity restores that are home product resale stores, thrift stores, and that generates funds as well for local building.
Pretty cool. Yeah, when you get a perfect storm of disaster, usually it's followed up privately by a perfect storm of people coming to task, and that's a good thing. There are many stories that you certainly have witnessed in your time with. How long have you been with Habitat for Humanity, as CEO and otherwise?
This is my 15th year as CEO, and I, like so many people, I first volunteered probably 25 years ago when I was working for the Walt Disney Company and took my team out to volunteer in Orlando, Florida, and I think, like many of us, you have that experience of community, and it makes you want to come back and do it some more, never knowing that was going to turn into my full-time vocation.
Yeah, and you probably see amazing things that most of us don't see. You probably see stories of great humanity that the common person would not even conceive as possible. Give me an example of one of those that just took your heart and said, this is everything that I'm doing.
You know, there's so many stories. One of my favorites from the book is a woman I met named Angel Meza. And Angel had faced really tough circumstances. She escaped an abusive marriage. She was homeless for a time. She was raising four daughters. And she could have given up. And her response instead was, I want to change things for my daughters. So they started volunteering all around the city. And it was interesting, maybe not the only case, but it was while volunteering at Habitat for Humanity, and even though she didn't have adequate housing, helping other families get better housing, she realized maybe someday she could buy a house. And I had the great privilege of helping build Angel's house in Denver, and she's the kind of person that makes the whole community around her better. And it's those sort of everyday stories that really inspire me. One of the most emotional stories that I've experienced is a gentleman named Vic Rombach, who was a Vietnam vet, and he has led groups of Vietnam veterans from America back to Vietnam to build alongside Vietnamese veterans of the war for families impacted by the war. And it is a very emotional story, but everyone finds healing and in the process, and it's really a beautiful story of kind of bringing hope and relationship out of very sad circumstances.
Wow. I'm assuming that people who read the book enter into that different world that kind of turns themselves toward other people. I mean, we all live a life of self-survival where, how am I going to pay my bills? Is it going to rain on my house? Is my car going to run? It's always, you know, keeping yourself going. This book kind of turns you toward other people, and you realize what that power is beyond where you sit. It's kind of interesting in that sense.
Absolutely. And I think the not-so-secret joyful part of that is, in doing that, we actually find more joy, more satisfaction, more sense of purpose, and that deep sense of community. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could describe for your listeners, you know, last week we had 1,400 volunteers in Nashville, Tennessee, building 21 houses. And there was this palpable sense of community with people from all kinds of backgrounds, all from all parts of the country, coming together And I think, as President Carter says, it's the best way he knows to put his faith into action and to be able to cross socioeconomic lines in a meaningful way. But he also says he gets more out of it than anything he's able to give. And I think when we serve, it really is, we can both see the best in ourselves. And my hope is when people read the book, they will be challenged and encouraged to go look for some small way to serve in their own community and to get engaged. And it's really the cumulative actions of lots of everyday folks that can really create change.
Interesting. An interesting book. It's well, how do we get more information about the book?
So I would love if people go to habitat.org/betterangels. They can learn about the book. It's available all the places you'd buy books. And they can also learn about, if they want, how to get involved with Habitat. Hmm. And I did want your listeners to know that 100% of my proceeds are going to Habitat. So if people do buy the book, they're helping the mission, not me, which I thought was important.
It's very important, and it falls in line with the kind of thing that you do, Jonathan. Habitat.org/betterangels. Pleasure and honor to speak to you.
Great to be with you, Ron. Thanks so much for having me on.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.
What a day, huh? What a day. It's starting to get cold outside. If you live in the Northeast or in other parts of the country where seasons actually change, this is like peak time. Oh my God. Oh my God. In most areas, the leaves are turning like red and orange and yellow and whatever. It's just really beautiful. It's like these postcards that you get from New England, you know, that's New England area. They have postcards and there's a little white steeple church and these beautiful different multicolored leaves on the trees around it. And maybe there's a pumpkin somewhere and that kind of thing. Maybe there's a bar open at 11 o'clock in the morning when you can have a drink, you know. They have the pumpkin-flavored drinks now. Let me tell you something. I never thought when I came from the other planet, I never thought that they would take something like a pumpkin, a large piece of squash is basically what the pumpkin is, and they'd start making flavored things out of it. It's like the pumpkin of all things to make a flavor out of, pumpkin flavored. And we go crazy about it. Oh, did you have the pumpkin flavored beer? Did you have the pumpkin flavored pudding? What are you, crazy? It's pumpkin. It's squash. What are you talking about? Of all the things that would be a delectable flavor, you're coming up with pumpkin? What are you kidding? But this is a big thing. There must have been some pumpkin marketer or something one day said, you know what? We're going to market pumpkins. We got all these pumpkins sitting here in the field, these big orange squishy things, and they got a hard shell on the outside and squishy on the inside. Maybe we can carve them. Yeah, but who's going to carve a pumpkin? I don't know. We have to do some marketing. We have to get people convinced that when you have the fall season, that you think pumpkins. Well, that's a large task to change an entire mind socially toward loving pumpkins. I know, but we can do this. We can do this. We can have people drinking pumpkin beer. Pumpkin beer? Are you serious? Yeah, pumpkin beer. We're going to take beer and add that little dash of squash to it. Then you think people are going to drink that? Oh, I do. Oh, I do. I do. When we get through with them, they'll be having pumpkin all over the place, man. What? What? Yeah, yeah. They're going to love pumpkin. They're going to love the color orange. Orange? That's like a weird color. Some people even make their faces orange. Like, I hope there's no president someday that looks like a pumpkin. Oh, there will be. We're going to market this big time. Pumpkin? Seriously, man? I'm in the pumpkin season. And everybody I talk to, almost everybody I talk to, which is like two people, I say, you know, hey, it's fall and time for pumpkins. And pumpkins, the pumpkin, I don't like pumpkin. If everybody doesn't like pumpkin, why is there so much pumpkin? It's a stupid word, too. Pumpkin. I don't understand what that means. Did you ever see a field of pumpkins? Ugh. And now we carve them. We carve faces now. We carve faces into vegetables. Yes, we do. We take a little knife and we carve out eyes and a nose and a mouth, and we turn a pumpkin into a face. Interesting. What else can we do that's kind of weird? Well, let's carve out the insides, since the insides are soft anyway, and let's stick a candle in it. Isn't that going to be kind of smelly? Isn't the candle going to like, isn't that going to smell like crap? I mean, isn't that going to be like a horrible odor, lighting a candle and heating up the inside of a pumpkin? Look, this is going to be big. This is going to be big. We're going to have candles and pumpkins all over the world. Crazy. You'll see. I'm telling you, I don't understand this pumpkin thing. All right. Did I end the show? I can't remember. Are we just hanging out now? What is this? Is this official or not? I don't even. Whatever. All right. I don't think I ended the show. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Until then, I wish you peace. It's crazy, man.